Did you know that Byers Airport Subaru is the oldest Subaru retailer in the entire country? And we're conveniently located right by the airport. Start your journey today at columbussubaru.com. Byers Auto, driving the next generation of buyers.
Off the ball. Rugby.
Yeah, it was very, very tough, but the first objective was to rebuild my body. I wanted to take the needed time to come back in the best way as I can.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The news round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening. You're welcome along to Tuesday night's Off the Ball. Hope you had a wonderful bank holiday weekend. It's Owen here with you until 10 o'clock tonight. And on News Talk Reshuffle Day, I can confirm that Marty Morrissey takes over tomorrow night here on Off the Ball. Coming up this evening from 7:30, it is Darren O'Sullivan who's going to join us to look back on the weekend's Gaelic football action. He will be chatting a bit about the Dubs. Ger Brennan has said that no man is safe in his squad. There's going to be a cull of his panel over the next couple of weeks, and none of the All-Ireland winners are necessarily immune from that cull. So he's coming up from 7:30. Between 8 and 9 is our Big Six Nations preview. Jerry Thornley and Chris Jones are going to be joining us on the line to look ahead to Thursday in Paris and, of course, the rest of the fixtures this weekend. And then from 9 o'clock, the football show with Jonathan Wilson is coming your way. And, of course, we'll have live updates on Chelsea versus Arsenal in the EFL Cup, which is kicking off at 8 p.m. Our number is 0879 180 180 if you want to drop us a WhatsApp message. Cameron Hill is here. Hello, Cameron.
Owen, how are you?
Very well. Michael McCarthy, how are you doing?
I'm all right. How do you feel about being left out of the cabinet reshuffle here?
Well, great.
Yeah.
Obviously. I'm still here.
Sorry, I don't mean you particularly. I mean more that people are moving around the place. You know, it's like, I suppose, you know, they have a cabinet reshuffle. It's time to shake things up. But like, you know, the Minister for Health is doing such an important job. They can't be possibly moved. You know, the business of government relies on that person finishing their whatever it might be. I think that happened like with Mary Harney a few times in the old coalition governments. It was like everybody changed, but she always stayed the course in health because she was doing such a great job there.
Yeah.
Look at the health service now. But I feel like that's where Off the Ball's place. That's the positive way I'm going to look at it. Not that we were just forgotten about and not even considered for one moment in any of this.
Maybe we were junior ministers after 7 p.m. I think that might be closer to the point. I don't think we've ever seen the cabinet table. I'd love to know what the cabinet table looks like. We're on the outside. We're the noisy backbenchers who say that Ireland should host the Olympics. And we get headline saying, you know, Ireland should host the World Cup, definitely.
Perpetually on The Tonight Show.
That's it.
Happy to appear on all media.
We have been rinsed by Vincent Brown ad nauseum. That's our role in the political landscape. Talking about reshuffles and being brought back down to earth and humbled. Nice. Did the Ireland team sheet today do that to us as well? I mean, the optimism has been non-existent. Let's face it, all since November, even predating November, there's been a sense of relative doom around this Ireland rugby team in the context of winning silverware right now.
It's like the opposite of the afterglow of Troy Parrott, where after November we were just, oh, please, just let's elongate this period between now and the Six Nations as much as possible. We do not want to face into that.
Can I ask you, what are your optimism levels if you wanted to give me a percentage? In general, not necessarily about Thursday, but just about Irish rugby in general.
It's got such a weird... like, someone was talking to me today about how there's such a... it seems like it's at a low ebb, the Six Nations right now. It feels, are we really up to it? And I think the year out from a World Cup, Six Nations always tends to be kind of a bit of a downer until you actually get into the into it properly and you get your teeth into a couple of games. I don't remember there being quite as much enthusiasm in 22, even though we were coming out of COVID and there were crowds going back to the stadiums. There was still a little bit of, oh, I'm not 100% sure about this. So it takes a while for it to tick over. From an Irish perspective, in the tournament generally, notwithstanding Thursday's game, it's the type of campaign that you feel will throw up a few surprises from an Ireland perspective. We could have an absolutely terrible game against Italy, for instance, and then beat England at Twickenham. It just has that sense of there's no rhyme or reason to it at all, the Six Nations generally. There's always a surprise.
So you're not optimistic, or you are optimistic?
You're saying
there's a chance of something special happening, but you don't think it will.
I'd be optimistic. It's like those people who were talking about Trump's tariffs, where they were like, no, he's right, because if he's wrong, we're really screwed. So I'm trying to be optimistic in the hopes that it manifests. That clearly, maybe there is a plan behind this, because if there isn't, I'm going to be very, very disappointed and a little bit world-wearied.
I don't know if it's not a plan so much as there aren't too many options there. I think Gordon Darcy wrote in the Irish Times today that, like, Irish rugby got apocalyptic incredibly fast. And I think he's right. You know, I think we have this insane doom and gloom around it. Like, there's talk in the office today, like, about us, like, shipping 60 points and things like that, you know? And
mainly from one of our off-the-ball colleagues.
I agree. But, like, in general, there's just this sense that we're just automatically going to get hammered. And I talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago, Owen. It's like, I do think it lacks a basic respect for what this Ireland team has done over the 7 years that Andy Farrell has been in charge, or certainly since that first, you know, kind of COVID-y, you know, the seventh campaign, so whatever, 6 years. And, you know, there's, like, they have constantly been at the forefront of the game. Fine, they didn't pass a quarterfinal of the World Cup and whatever. And, like, even this team, like, won a triple crown last year. You know what I mean? It's not like they're not coming from a point of absolute nowhere. A lot of injury issues and certainly some succession issues and some young players coming through that everybody is concerned about, rightly. But I think, is it possibly a medium-term concern rather than a short-term? Are we being a little bit dismissive of what they're going to do this in this 6 weeks?
I completely agree. I think it's mad that things have gone so negative so quick. Like, this time last year, we were talking about, oh, Ireland could win three in a row. I mean, there's a possibility that we go do that. And after the first weekend, it felt like that possibility was a bit stronger because they came back against England and were able to pull that out of the fire. So it does change on a dime, it feels. Yeah, I think there's no such thing as a wobble in Irish rugby. It always feels like it's got to be a catastrophe because, you know, there's the Irish mentality of, well, we're here now. We might as well get our bang for our buck and make this an absolute disaster rather than a middling Six Nations. Like, there's talk of, gosh, could we be fourth this time? And I don't know if that's credible, honestly.
There was an interesting stat that I read in Rob Kitson's newsletter this week about the record in Six Nations after a Lions tour. So he's writing from an England standpoint. For the last 16 Six Nations / Five Nations that have happened the year after a Lions tour, England have won zero of those 16 championships. In all the Six Nation championships after a Lions tour in the professional era, there have been seven. Five of them have been won by France. And it bodes well in the past, or it did bode well for Ireland in the past when they weren't a bulk suppliers to the Lions because they picked up two of them in those years. And generally, it will be England who would suffer. So granted, I'm not necessarily agreeing with you guys here. I'm actually just guiding us down this path of negativity further. But because of the fact that Ireland were bulk suppliers to the Lions last year, that would actually support the fact that this is going to be a tough Six Nations for us.
Yeah, and fine. And but it also,
as a country,
it also might be. But what I'm saying is just this idea that they're going over like no hopers in the 1990s to Paris, you know, to concede a quick 40 points and then maybe get a consolation try in the second half, something to build on in our 45-5 defeat.
That sounds like a pretty accurate prediction to me, Mick.
Do you think so?
I know it kind of
happened last year, funny enough, but that, like, one-offs can happen. But
that was at home as well.
The days of Ireland just being routinely hammered on trips to Paris, I think are largely gone. And maybe we're heading in that direction. But here's the thing. It's almost that, like, do you believe it before you see it? I think Ireland have done enough over, you know, in some ways 20 odd years, but certainly in the last 5 years or so, they've done enough that until it does collapse, we have no right to assume it will. I just feel like there has to be some credit in the bank. Everyone is so negative, like.
Yeah, I was thinking about this earlier on and trying to build the ridiculous case for Ireland to win on Thursday night. And I came up with five ridiculous reasons why Ireland might actually win this game on Thursday. So the ridiculous argument, number one, is that maybe Andrew Porter actually was the victim of a refereeing vendetta from English refs against him. And with him out of the team, actually the scrum is refereed more fairly and everything actually goes totally fine for them.
They're chat-GPTing Jeremy Lachman right now. Who absolutely is he? What does he do?
Ridiculous argument number two is that maybe the French are so angry that Ireland injured Antoine Dupont last year that they go out to exact revenge in such violent fashion and they get three red cards in the first 15 minutes. That could absolutely happen.
Three red cards in 15 minutes.
There you go. Yeah. The third ridiculous argument is that maybe the French players are so angered by the omission of Penno, Ficou, Aldrit, modern French greats, that they turn on their head coach and we get our latest French mutiny. Frankly, it's been way too long since a French rugby mutiny. I think there was a mini one in the 2019 World Cup, but the last major French rugby mutiny we've had is actually in the 2015 Rugby World Cup. So I think it's due that. A fourth ridiculous argument is that Jacob Stockdale has been hustling us for the last number of years, and actually 2018 Jacob Stockdale has been cryogenically frozen and he's going to go out and kill the French this week. And then the final ridiculous argument is that we've underestimated the Bordeaux-Toulouse rivalry, and that Jalibert and Dupont is kind of like Lampard and Gerrard in England's midfield in the 2000s, and that they straight up hate each other, and that'll be to the great detriment of France in front of their home fans, and Ireland skirt away with a bonus point victory.
Can I offer two enhancements on the points 4 and 5? Jacob Stockdale's 7-try record in a single Six Nations Championship was broken last year by Louis Bielbiere, so he's got that on his mind too. That'll be grist the mill.
Yes.
And apparently, like, Galtier just really doesn't like Jalibert at all. I'm surprised that he's in the starting team, because they've fallen out quite a few times. I remember he just left. Did he leave camp last year? Was just like, I'm done with this. Bye. I'm not starting this week. I'll see you later. And did a bit of a Saipan and was training in Bordeaux like the very next day. So, yeah, I don't think it's without reason that a Galtier mutiny, like, it could happen.
What was Jacob Stockdale's? What was Jacob Stockdale's great year?
18.
What happened to Ireland that year?
They won the Grand Slam.
Yeah, and what did Cameron say about the Six Nations the year before a World Cup? Sure, nobody cares, really. This is where Ireland shine. We won the 2014 Six Nations, won the 2018 Grand Slam. Don't really remember what happened in 2022, but I'm sure we were brilliant.
That's why we were in a state of doom. This is the one year we're supposed to be good.
Wasn't 2022 our great year, actually? Wasn't it? That was the world number one year.
Everything looks bad if you remember it. Come on.
Do you want to give us the team for people who might have missed this earlier, Cameron? It is what you're leading with. Our 15 for Thursday night.
Well, brothers Kian and Sam Prendergast will start together for the first time for Ireland in their Six Nations opener, away to France, at the Stade de France on Thursday. Leinster out half. Sam gets the nod at 10, while Connacht captain Kian will line out in the back row. Thursday's game in Paris will also be the flanker's first ever Six Nations game, and head coach Andy Farrell says he deserves his chance.
We feel he's matured a lot. The captaincy is certainly helping him, and in Connacht as well. Taking the responsibility, I would have thought, just away from just himself, and able to channel his thoughts in another way, certainly matured him as a player, that's for sure. But yeah, we was delighted with how he took his chance in the autumn, because he's another one who's been waiting for a big moment. You know, he's been waiting in the wings for a good few years, so his time is now to be taken. And he's across most things in his game, which he's pretty good at. You know, certainly set piece wise, and his work rate around the field is pretty impressive.
There are 7 changes in all from the defeat to South Africa at the Aviva Stadium last November. Jacob Stockdale making his first Six Nations start since 2021. He's on the left wing in place of James Lowe. No Hugo Keenan, of course, through injury. So Jamie Osborne returns from the shoulder injury picked up against Japan in November to take the 15 shirt. Stuart McCloskey starts at inside centre, while Jeremy Lachman is named at loose head amid an injury crisis in the front row. Thomas Clarkson is the starting tight head, with Prendergast selection at 6. Seeing Ty Byrne move up to second row, partnering Joe McCarthy, and James Ryan, Finlay Beelam and Jack Conan are the forwards in a 6-2 split on the bench, with Munster duo Craig Casey and Jack Crowley covering the backs.
Can I just say, like, just on the back of kind of a more vague thing about, like, trusting this Ireland team, like, it's not a team of rubes either, you know what I mean? You look at, like, Dan Sheehan is in that team, Joe McCarthy and Ty Byrne is an unbelievably potential, like, the potential of that as a second row partnership. You've still got Caelan Doris, you've still got former World Player of the Year Josh van der Fleer. You've got Jack Conan, the 6th test starting line, coming off the bench. You know, you've got Jemison Gibson-Park. He's got Gary Ringrose. Like, there's loads of good players there. Tommy O'Brien's been one of the most informed players. You know, if we got, like, you know, a proper fast winger that we can utilise. This, again, it's a team we don't know. Fair enough, absolutely. There's a depth issue at prop that you would be absolutely concerned about. Are France going to, like, we all have this unbelievable fear of the scrum because of South Africa, but South Africa are South Africa. It's a unique case. You know what I mean? I'm not saying that France are in any way not, you know, threatening or dangerous up front, but I don't know if they're in the South African League either. You know, so I just think, again, I feel like we've lost all perspective. And look, we can come on here on Friday and Ireland can lose by 50 points and you can say, I told you so, but I still think it's like the evidence isn't there yet that that's going to happen.
John Limerick said the match on Thursday is going to be difficult but not a disaster. It'll be tight at 60 minutes, but the French bench will prove too much. 10-point win to France. Far more negativity coming in from another texter. I'm saying it with months. Christ above, that Irish team today is pure SH1T. Farrell should have went when he accepted the Lions job. Should have been building for the next World Cup rather than propping and priming other nations' panels. Squad depth and age profile, shite.
Do you want to hear a funny stat I heard or read today, that five of the under-20s winning side from France in that 2023 final against Ireland are playing in this 23, only one from Ireland, and that's Sam Prendergast. So just shows the contrast in the ability of bringing through talent that France have been able to with the top 14. And
Having 14 teams plus another division versus having four teams will often make that happen.
Yeah, exactly.
It's going to be harder to get a game in Irish rugby as an up-and-coming player.
0879 180 180 is our WhatsApp number if you want to get in touch. Let's turn to the football, Cameron.
Well, Mikel Arteta says Arsenal still have work to do to reach the EFL Cup final. The Gunners hold a 3-2 lead over Chelsea heading into the second leg of their tie at the Emirates Stadium this evening. Now, Arteta also offered a pretty strong rebuttal when asked why their style of play is not rated as highly compared to other top European sides. Former Manchester United midfielder Paul Scholes has suggested that Arsenal would be the most boring team to ever win the Premier League. Here's what he had to say in response.
Well, it depends. I don't know. I would have to analyze about which teams they are talking about, which styles and in which kind of game. The game that we expect is going to be very specific and very clear what is going to happen. So it depends. We have to play well, very well, the game that you have to play. Because it's not only what you have to do, it's an opponent very close to you that wants to take the game to a different scenario.
People say that your style, Arsenal's style, not very exciting.
I heard completely the opposite. All around Europe, that we are the most exciting team in Europe, the most goals, the most clean sheets, the most this, so maybe I have a different resources.
Well, why do you think this is? Why do you think people are saying this then?
I have no idea. I don't know which people, you tell me the names and the surname and the address and the email, maybe we can talk, but we are talking because I can give you a massive book of all the peoples.
We'll come back to that in just a sec. The starting lineups tonight, Kepa in goals for Arsenal, back four of Jurrien Timber, Saliba, Gabriel, and in Capier, it's a midfield of Zubimendi, Rice, and Eberechi Eze. It's Gyökeres in the nine, Martinelli on the left, and Madueke on the right. Chelsea, meanwhile, looks like they're playing in a 3-5-2 formation. It's Sanchez in goals, Hato, Chalaba, and Fofana, three centre-backs. Gusto on the right wing, Cucurella on the left wing. A midfield of Enzo Fernandez, Andre Santos, and Moises Caicedo, with João Pedro and Liam Delap both playing, both starting together in that Chelsea team. So obviously they're 3-2 down there, chasing things at the Emirates tonight at 8 p.m. Mick, victory lap. You called Leeds 0, Arsenal 4 on Saturday. You called that specific scoreline on Friday's Off the Ball.
I did. Now, it was in the context of a big long spiel about how, you know, that Leeds could be the perfect, you know, the most difficult opposition that Arsenal could possibly face, and the physical battle might not suit them. And I think I might have said, look, Arsenal probably win 4-0 now. And
yeah, not facetiously at all. That was, you were like, this is my absolute crystal ball.
There was a sort of a feeling that, like, the entire point of everything I said in promotion of Leeds as a tough test was, there is a world in which Arsenal, you know, like they did say against Villa, and you mentioned they haven't done enough times, but they just put the marker down, and they were very, very good on Saturday in a very, you know, efficient way, in the way that Arsenal are, despite what Mikel Arteta says. You know, the first two goals were comically Arsenal. They really were, you know. And and look, that's what it is. But they went and took care of business, and it was such a big win. I wasn't a bit surprised then that City didn't win yesterday, because it did feel like that was Arsenal, like, you know, yeah, that's wrapping it up now. But then again, next week we'll be back saying they're bottling. Again, the week after they'll have wrapped it up and then they'll bottle it and so on.
Yeah, Sunderland at home next week for Arsenal. Perfect bottle job territory for the Gunners. Let's move on to some news regarding Gianni Infantino, Cameron.
Well, the Ukraine sports minister has slammed Gianni Infantino for suggesting that FIFA will look at lifting their ban on Russia. So, of course, Russian national teams and clubs were suspended from all competitions by FIFA and UEFA in February 2022 following the country's invasion of Ukraine. In an interview with Yalda Hakim on Sky News, Infantino claims the ban on Russia has achieved nothing.
Ukraine, Russia. We spent 40 years now in Europe sanctioning Russia, criticizing Russia. We think we can solve a war if we don't engage, if we don't speak, if we don't try to understand if you don't put people in the room.
But so, you know, earlier you said that we should re-engage with Russia. Are you saying that you would look at lifting the ban on Russia?
Oh, definitely, we have to, yes. Yes, at least at youth level, you know, for children. Because this ban has not achieved anything. It has just created more frustration and hatred with girls and with boys. And I feel that having girls and boys from Russia being able to play football games in other parts of Europe would help. We should actually never ban any country from playing football because of the acts of their political leaders. You punish too many people that don't deserve to be punished, I think. And somebody needs to have the strength and the force to maintain the relations and the ties open.
Listen,
and that man is Gianni Infantino.
If I want to hear an educated voice on how to achieve world peace, it's Gianni Infantino that I'm going to.
Well, the man who gave out the peace prize.
Where's that going next year? Do you think there could be a 2027, 2026 peace prize sitting in the Kremlin, maybe in 2027?
Maybe, yeah, Vladimir Putin. Yeah,
that would be a safe bet. Definitely,
yeah, yeah. The person who wages war by invading a neighboring country should probably get the peace prize. All right, I would imagine. Yeah, can we all just agree that, like, we're in a world now since 2016 probably especially where you kind of think, how could this possibly be the case? How come we can't just get rid of the moron in charge of something and like move on with some sort of sensible, you know, if even middle ground boring and even borderline corrupt future, but just something that's just straightforward, you know? So we've been in this world, and then you think in football, surely football could just have something a little bit better than that clown.
No.
Surely. No, like, I mean, it's like, whatever. Well, I know we can't solve the world's problems.
There's been
problems,
too much optimism on this news round.
Surely the sport could just do better than him.
No, I like...
I can understand, we cannot give up on politics as an entity. It's over, right? It's done. The worst of the worst will always rise to the top, right?
But what do you think FIFA is?
Well, of course, I know, but surely there should be something more pure about the fact that it's sport, you know?
Chip is long in the distance, not even a speck on the horizon, Mick. But I appreciate your yearning for, you know, that this might actually become a reality of a better world.
No. I just wish it would.
Do you have a bit more on this story, some comments from the Ukraine side of things?
Yeah, so Matvey Bidney, who is the sports minister of Ukraine, said in a social media post in response to Infantino, Infantino's words sound irresponsible, not to say infantile. They detach football from the reality in which children are being killed. Let me remind you that since the start of Russia's full-scale aggression, more than 650 Ukrainian athletes and coaches have been killed by Russians. Among them were more than 100 footballers.
Will you quickly run us through the rest of today's news?
Well, NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell has confirmed that there will be no regular season game in Ireland later this year. Croke Park hosted the sellout between the Pittsburgh Steelers and the Minnesota Vikings back in September. There are 9 international NFL games scheduled for 2026, including 3 in London and a first ever game in Paris. Meanwhile, the dates and venues for Ireland's Rugby World Cup pool matches in Australia next year have been confirmed. Their first game in Pool D will be against Portugal in the Sydney Football Stadium on Monday, the 4th of October. The Scotland game, the big one of that pool, will be in Perth Stadium on Sunday, October 10th, while Docklands Stadium in Melbourne is the venue for the clash with Uruguay on Sunday, October 17th. And this weekend's Division 1A clash between Cork and Tipperary is set to break the record for a standalone game in the National Hurling League, the Irish Examiner reporting. The 25,000 fans are expected at Páirc Uí Chaoimh on Saturday for the meeting of last year's All-Ireland finalists. And just to finish, Owen, Mark English has broken his Irish indoor 800 metre record for the second time in 3 weeks. He came third in the Czech indoor gala today in 1 minute 44.23 seconds. It's 0.4 of a second faster than his previous record set in Luxembourg on the 18th of January.
Lots in that. I found myself doing this bizarre thing where I looked at a clip of Roger Goodell speaking earlier and I was like, this man might actually be speaking some sense. He was defending Bad Bunny after his Grammy's acceptance speech the last day. Of course, it's in his interest to defend his Super Bowl halftime show artist, but
are they trying to lure him into a, you know, maintain the right wing pro ice NFL stance, was it?
Well, kind of. There was a tone of you have a certain platform to say certain things at a certain time, and basically the subtext was we expect you not to say that this weekend. But also he was kind of defending the fact that he could say whatever the hell he wanted while accepting that award on Sunday, which to be fair is unbelievably progressive from Roger Goodell. Text in on FIFA. Joe in Galway says, you think FIFA can do better? They can't. Look at his predecessor. They can and probably will do worse, though. And Owen's been in touch to say, imagine FIFA didn't go for John Delaney. They really missed out.
But do you not think that Sepp Blatter, in retrospect, looks kind of like positively quaint?
Yeah.
Up against Infantino.
Yes.
You know, it's like, when Blatter was there, we thought we could do better, let's face it. And let's face it, there was a more than the mild corruption I kind of hinted at earlier.
Will we be talking about Infantino like this in 10 years' time?
Things would have to get pretty bad.
You wouldn't write it off. our texter, who's been particularly negative on Irish rugby, who's
brilliantly
verbose in his text, has been back in touch to say, on a positive note, if enthusiasm decreases around the rugby team, I might get a chance to get a ticket to bring the young lad. I've been to Munster and Leinster games with him and would love to bring him to a Six Nations game at a reasonable price. That is a silver lining in all of this. Ireland win the wooden spoon, you'll be able to get more reasonable price tickets to the Six Nations. Everybody's a winner. Cameron, thank you very much for tonight's news round.
Introducing a new Off the Ball football podcast original. Richie McCormick's Sliding Doors. These are the stories of those big money deals that just didn't quite happen.
Figo. Ronaldo. He's made space for himself. Ronaldo's shot. Pick that out. What a hat-trick.
Episode 1 of this podcast series focuses on Ronaldo and a move to Glasgow Rangers. Subscribe now in your OTB football podcast feed to not miss an episode of this six-part series coming to you live each and every Monday.